All right, here we are. Common Sense Ohio. The year is flying by, as it always does, at an alarming pace. It is February 25, 2026. Couple things we're going to talk about. We're going to hit some highlights. Obviously, the State of the Union, Trump delivers his speech. Ohio Republican Party divided, perhaps, but maybe that's common around the country. And
Olympics.
The tariff, Olympics.
Tariffs.
And the Olympics. Since, I mean, really, it's just too much to handle. Anyway, yeah, let's start this day in history.
Birthright citizenship.
Oh, my gosh. It has no
voter ID. I mean.
It has no end. But as we always start, this day in history, February 25, 1964, Muhammad Ali shakes up the world, defeating Sonny Liston in, the eighth round. Liston does not come off the stool to answer the bell. Was the fix in? You tell me. I don't know. The FBI seems to think that Liston was tied in with some gamblers, and some guy named Resnick apparently knew in advance, or at least his betting would have reflected that he knew in advance. And then, of course, in the rematch about a year later, I think May the following year, the Phantom Punch takes Liston down again, even perhaps more suspicious. I don't know.
Wow.
But interesting stuff. I love watching this stuff, and it's a fascinating time in history.
Yeah.
At the time, it was Cassius Clay. He announces he's Muhammad Ali. So then you had all that sort of conspiracy theories about the Nation of Islam maybe something to do with threatening Liston. But even more important and perhaps more in tune with the day, 16th Amendment is ratified.
Okay.
And what does that do? Anyone? That's why we pay income taxes, folks. So the 16th Amendment, basically before that, we had Article 1, Section 8, which empowered Congress, or the Congress, to collect taxes, but it had to be apportioned amongst the states. There was some Supreme Court case law when Congress was trying to tax people, probably to pay for the Civil War and other things. But then around 1913, this 16th Amendment passes that basically gives Congress the power to take your money. And there was a case, Pollock versus Farmers Loan and Trust and Company, where the Supreme Court in 1895 says, no, you can't just tax individuals, which sort of prompted the 16th Amendment. You know how much what the percentage rate was?
Oh my gosh, it was a pittance.
2%.
2%.
2%. So look, let the camel in the tent, and it will take over or later. I didn't do the deep dive into this, but before that, and I always try to find something in history that ties us in. But before that, we were relying on tariff income.
That's right.
To run the country.
Right.
And you can imagine what happened when we increased the revenue to the federal government. It got bigger.
Yeah.
A lot bigger.
Right.
And, this is on the heels of this progressivism that culminates with FDR, where we're going to create all these departments and expand the government and do all this stuff. And, we paid for what we got, and we got what we paid for, a bigger government that has since then grown and grown and grown and grown. And this is why I think we should all be a little bit vigilant in adding and letting the government start something, because it never comes back.
Right, right.
Never comes back.
Well, Ohio was a income tax-free state until 1978.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so somehow the state of Ohio, functioned for 175 years, basically, without an income tax. Then we get one when Governor Gilligan and the Democrats and post-Watergate took over control of the state house and the governorship, and we got the state income tax. And we've had a succession of complete and total dominance many times in the in the last 50 years by the Republican Party. And have they gotten rid of the income tax? No, they have not.
No, and they won't.
Because people are hooked on the bennies that the income tax is paying for. And we even had George Voinovich, Republican governor of Ohio, crying at one point that he couldn't fully fund some kind of welfare program. And you're just like, whatever happened to living within your means and just providing a safety net for those who are truly injured or unable to work or, aged or whatever the disability is. But no, instead we have somewhere around one out of every five Ohioans on Medicaid, which is, that's not what any of this is supposed to be about.
Well,
it's become a general benefit.
It's not the American way, right? It never was the American. I mean, think of the ruggedness of the pioneers or the people who settled the West or the people in this territory, the Northwest Territory, the people that were coming in from Virginia in the East and they came here to the wilderness with nothing.
Even think of Southern Democrat governors like former President Clinton. His State of the Union at one point, his comment was, the age of big government is over.
Yeah.
He was of that ilk, if you will, like JFK, like a lot of, if you will, your classic Democrats were like, yeah, we don't want a big government either. You know, we want to slim it down so that people can, we talk about affordability. The reason a lot of people cannot afford the lifestyle that they want to live is they're being taxed to death by either real estate taxes, income taxes, or in Ohio, both.
Yeah, yeah. And this will sort of dovetail with the discussion we're having off
about the
State of the Union address. And
yeah.
I'm going to get there in a circumloquacious type of way.
But,
you know, we've created this dependence.
Yeah.
And, you know, you were a parent. You raised two boys.
Sure.
I raised two boys.
Yeah.
And one of the hardest things that we have to do as parents, I was just talking to a very dear friend about this yesterday. He's just starting. And he was saying, tell me about what you thought about being a dad. And we had this conversation. And, you know, it dawned on me, one of the hardest things about being a dad is saying no.
Yeah.
And as a logical extension to that, it is letting your kids fail.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like the old saying, like if I pray to God for strength, he gives me adversity.
Yeah.
Because on the other side of that is strength.
Yeah.
You know, that's that, and we have to, like, we have somehow lost sight of this.
Yeah. And earlier the failure, Steve,
the better.
The better.
Because they're minimal.
It becomes minimal. An object lesson then,
yes.
Or learned early on that, you know, if you don't do your homework, right? If you don't study your books, test you take tomorrow, it'll be a disaster.
It'll be a disaster.
You got to bring the F home to me to sign. So now you're humiliated because mom and dad are having to sign your paper that little Bobby got an F, right?
And instead, what's happening is we are doing the studying for our kids. And when they get the F, we go back into school and argue with the teachers to make that a B or an A because we're so worried about what's going to happen to them in the future if they don't have the grades. I mean, this culminates in that scandal where these
the helicopter
Hollywood elites were paying to get their kids into school. I mean, it's so insane because what's going to lead to success in this world is experiencing individual failure. Any success I have is built on mountains and mountains of dumb, stupid failures.
That's right.
That I'm responsible for. Nobody else.
If you're helicoptering in, you know, to rescue your kid from some kind of academic grade, you're not doing the kid any favor at all. That child never learned to fend for him or herself in the real world because mommy or daddy's going to chop her in. I even know of a situation where a college graduate, a business college graduate, got an interview at Procter & Gamble, and her mommy went with her to the job interview.
Good grief.
And the recruiter at P&G said, why are you here?
Mm-hmm.
And the mother said, well, to support my daughter. And she's just like, well, you're not going to be clocking in were she to get the job. Like,
well, look,
please leave.
So how am I going to connect this possibly to the State of the Union?
Like, yeah.
How possibly can we connect this? Here's the problem that the answer to that really falls on the heels of the answer to this question. Why are we doing this? Like what is going on? Why are we doing this?
Right.
And there's probably some deeper reasons than one. You know, there's smarter people than I studying this crap, although they're afraid to say it out loud. I think there is this notion of virtue that maybe perhaps the suburbanites or the parents or the people I fell into the trap at times. I had to resist it, but there's this notion of virtue that we derive from this appearance of perfection to the world, or we're gonna do this so we're better somehow,
right?
Or we're gonna give and do for all these people, but
right.
It's not even that you're giving and doing; it's that you want to support the government They're the people that want to take over the government to give, and do. That way you can somehow feel better about yourself
right.
for the way you're living.
Right.
What I had to learn, and we all sort of have to learn the hard way, is that's not how you feel better about yourself. You can't just ascribe to this list of agenda items and say, I believe in all those things, so I'm better, because it's meaningless. It's meaningless. It gets you nowhere. And you can be, you know, crap all over the Christian faith or any faith for that matter. But if you live for some other higher set of values and not just virtue signaling to your peers to get your edification,
yeah,
you're going to be better. Going to be better. And,
right.
And you won't do these things, or if you do that naturally, everything else sort of falls into place.
Right.
So what does this have to do with the State of the Union? You and I both have been critical of Trump at times.
Sure.
And I still am it a lot. But what I'm not critical of is the successes. And they're, you know, when the hockey team wins and people are cheering for them, stand up and cheer, damn it.
Right. It should be a unifying moment.
That should be a unifying moment. Right. And look, I advise people for a living. And if I were advising the Democrats, if I could be a little angel on their shoulder, I would say, give Trump the win on this one. You're going to look better for it because it's good for the country.
Right.
You know, give him the win. Stand up. Cheer for these hockey
guys.
Well,
even more appropriately, make it part of your win.
Make it part of your win. Right?
It's your win too. They weren't out there skating for the GOP and putting the puck in for Trump. They in some ways they did it in the memory of the Blue Jackets guy we had here, Gaudreau, yep. Right? They're celebrating and remembering their friend, and it was just a beautiful win. As the kid with the broken teeth, Jack Hughes said,
"What a picture!
This was for all of America." He just kept saying over and over again, "I'm so proud to be an American." Well, my Democrat friends, that includes you too.
Yes.
Wasn't excluding you. So why would you not just take that win on board and say, we love you too?
It's because of the problem that we brought up. They feel compelled to subscribe to this set of ideals. And the one at the very top is, if Trump says it, you have to oppose it.
You have to be against it.
You have to be against it. And it just is lunacy. All these things can be true at once. I'm going to tell a story. I went to this pre-law program at Oxford. It was at Somerville College in Oxford. That was back in the 90s. It's actually a women's college, but it was a summer program. And that's where it's through the Ohio State University. And we went through a seminar. I don't know, it was two or three months, a couple months. And it was back when we were still studying the foundations of English common law and really rich Western history. And there was a professor who put us in all these sort of ethical and moral dilemmas and debates amongst this class. And we were parting our faces off at night, but during the day, we were going through some of this. And at the end, he sort of gave, it was like a great primer for law school, because at the end, he gave this speech. And the speech was, look, I put you all in these moral ethical dilemmas because I wanted to show you that it's impossible to be perfectly consistent on all, he was teaching us critical thought.
Yeah.
It's impossible to, and I'll tell you what, I'll never forget, there was a whiny, obnoxious woman or a gal that was part of the program. And I'm not saying she's a gal just because it has nothing to do with, I don't think it has anything to do with her gender.
Right.
I just remember her.
Yeah.
And she was obnoxious and she was whiny and she was a know-it-all. She goes, nah, I was consistent the whole time. Yada, yada. And we all just looked at her like, you just missed the whole point, you idiot. And she was doing what I'm talking about. I just didn't realize it at the time.
Yeah.
Now I know why that was so troubling to us.
Yeah.
Like the point that I was supposed to take away from that is, think critically about everything and don't ascribe to an agenda, because it's impossible.
Right.
Everything is unique. You have to consider everything. And just because they say it, that doesn't mean you should do it.
That's right.
You should reach your own conclusions using your own critical thought.
That's right.
And
the worst kind of logic would be to cave in to appeals from authority, for example, because somebody said so, you're either pro or con because the authority figure said so. And if you think like that, if you just blindly, lemmingly follow people off a cliff, that's a logical fallacy to do that.
And it's the hardest. It's one of the hardest things to do.
Yeah.
Somebody you like has a position.
Right.
And you in your heart know it's not something you agree with.
Right.
It's really difficult.
Hash it out with them.
It's really difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. And in the State of the Union speech, Trump performed some of these intellectual traps that the Democrats just fell into. And I don't want to, probably Fetterman and a handful of rational Democrats didn't fall into this, and they stood and clapped and they did the normal things. What people are calling the normies, the people out there in the electorate that are neither really, diehard Republicans or diehard Democrats. They're just working people who just seek normalcy. And by that I mean, men are men, women are women. Our country is basically a great country with a great history. And whatever flaws this country has, we assiduously as a country try to resolve those flaws like we did with slavery, took a civil war. Things like that this is a great country and we eventually give women the vote. We eventually have a civil rights movement. We eventually, try to better ourselves as American history proceeds. And those are called normies or normal people. And what the Democrats, the radical Democrats were doing is Trump would say something like, here's the mother, an angel mom, right? Of a surviving mother of a child that was killed at age 12 or something by illegal immigrants, raped and killed and left, to die under a bridge or something. And he would present the surviving mother or the family. And the Democrat and the Republican half would stand up and clap and recognize that takes strength to survive the loss of your child in such an ugly way. And the Democrats wouldn't stand up. And and there were several of these instances. And at one point, Trump exploded. And this is really the midterms coming up in a nutshell. He pointed at the crazies like Ilhan Omar and, AOC, where they would normally sit. A lot of them were not there because they went on strike. But he pointed to that wing of the Democrat Party and said, these people are crazy. They're crazy. And you know what? That is really probably the essence of what's going to happen at the midterms that people who cannot relate to normal people are not going to get their votes.
Well, I can't quite sort it all out. Like, I don't know where the people are going to be on this.
Yeah.
Whether this is obvious to everybody or not. Is it Trump is so bad that it does everybody suffer this same
the
flaw
TDS.
That we're talking about?
Yeah.
That we just have these values and the top of the list is we hate Trump. So anything he does, we have to reject. And because he's a Republican, we have to reject it.
Right.
Try to remember what it was like. I mean, before,
yeah.
It's like, look, you can say this is horrible and there's awful things happening, but it reminds me of a quote. And I'll give you two quotes. One is that now that we don't have to be perfect, we can be good, right? We don't have to be a perfect country. We'll never be perfect. We have to strive for it. We can be good.
It's a human institution. It'll never be perfect.
And then the quote I always use is a spinoff of that we are a perfect country. It's just that we're the best, right? And let's strive towards that. Let's be the best.
Right.
And that means we incorporate all these values. That means we incorporate all this stuff. And we don't just reject something out of hand because of the guy who is in the White House. And I think that's what those hockey players were trying to say.
Right.
Is that we did this for the country. We didn't do it for Trump.
Right.
We did it for the country.
Right.
And celebrate that.
And the subtext, Steve, they don't even have to say that we didn't do this for Trump. Like all the normies know that. We all know. Like nobody passed around the microphone back in 1980 when the Miracle on Ice happened, the original one, right?
Right.
Nobody went around and said, are you a Ronald Reagan fan?
Yeah.
I mean, nobody did that. And so why is that a criteria for whether or not they're welcome at the State of the Union? Mike Ruzioni and those guys were welcome to the White House and they were feted and all of that. And it's just an American victory.
It should have been a unifying time.
Yeah.
These people can't give the country the win.
That boy took a hockey stick to his face.
That bloody smile with the American flag. I mean, it gives me chills. It gives me chills thinking about it. It's like
he scored the winning goal.
It's like, damn it, that's American right there.
Right there.
Right there.
Right there. I mean, that is Sergeant York and, you know, Chesty Puller and Mike Arruzioni and Jesse Owens.
Yeah.
You mentioned Muhammad Ali, who you know, avoided the draft. But no one would ever say that Muhammad Ali was not a great American. Of course he was.
Of course he was.
He was a great American. He was funny. He was generous. He was involved in his community. And did I disagree with his politics? Hell yeah, I did. But I loved Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And when I saw him, nothing but goodness and happiness happened in my heart. And it had nothing to do with politics.
Yeah, particularly later in life when you saw some of this. And look, you can say, and I guess the hard part for the I hate Trumpers is that Trump did this. And what I mean by did this is like he has turned the State of the Union into this sort of like the some Hollywood awards ceremony, right?
Yeah.
We're going to bring in these people. He's going to make some pageantry out of it.
Yeah.
And look, it's he played the Queen's Gambit or whatever in chess, right? It was a good chess move. He brings these people in because he's putting the Dems in a spot where they have to choose the lesser of two evils. Do they celebrate this even though Trump did it, or do they not celebrate it and risk the criticism that we have for them?
Right.
And but the real criticism, again, is not that they hate Trump. It's that they can't get past this agenda of ideas that they feel like they have to ascribe to in order to appease their peers or to have that virtue.
Right.
And look, it's okay to celebrate the hockey team. It's okay to celebrate that we don't have people crossing the border. It's okay to celebrate that crime is down, that fentanyl is down. It's okay to celebrate all those things.
Right.
And we can argue in the weeds about how we get those things done.
Right.
And that's how it used to be.
That's right.
But now they can't even celebrate the accomplishment and it's a bad look.
It's a bad look. I'll never forget a previous State of the Union speech at Trump during his first term. He was talking about how there was record low unemployment amongst minorities, women, and the population in general. And I remember everybody stood up and clapped except the Democratic Party. And Joe Manson was the only Democrat that stood up. And Joe Manson turned around and looked at the other Democrat senators there at the State of the Union speech. And he actually went like this. He was urging them to stand up because all Trump did was point out that there was record low unemployment.
It's a win.
So who is pro high unemployment? Like, why are you sitting down? Why wouldn't you be happy that there's low unemployment?
It's what it is.
That's an accomplishment for the whole country. It's not just Trump.
Right.
That means employers are out there hiring people.
It's a chess move that Trump put them in where they had to choose between the queen or the rook, right? And it's like,
unbelievable.
If I'm going to make that choice, take the rook.
Yeah.
And they should have done that because then they can turn it and make it a win for them.
Exactly.
They can say, look, we don't agree with most of what this guy did, but we can agree that we love our country and this is good for the country.
Well, and that we passed legislation or we're part of the government also that achieved this success. And so we played a hand in that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like this Maduro thing where they went down to Venezuela and got this drug lord extracted. And now he's on trial. He'll have a jury trial unless he waives it. If I was a Democrat, I'd say, yeah, we're against drugs. We're against drug dealers. I would say, you know, there were plenty of good Democrats in the Army, in the Navy, in the Air Force that went down there and they did their jobs too. And
you know what it is, maybe?
I mean, why wouldn't you just take credit for that along with Trump and diffuse that a little bit so it's not just his victory, it's yours too.
It's almost, I'm trying to figure out as I think this through, what is so troubling about this? And I think it's because I think here's really what's going on is that I have a hard time believing. Now, some of them, maybe it is true that they truly hate the country.
Yeah.
But I have a hard time believing that they all do.
Right. And I agree.
So I think what they're doing here by ascribing to this set of agendas instead of
Right.
Looking at things individually and saying, this is good, this is bad, this is what it is, and I've thought this through.
Right.
You know what it is? What really is at the heart of it is dishonesty.
That's right.
It's really, it's a dishonest look. And that's right. What makes it so hard.
And when you hit the tape recorder rewind button and you go back and play prior comments by Barack Obama or Chuck Schumer about immigration, for example, that we need to shut down the border. You know, like they're very clear about that. Mm-hmm. And Obama, of course, deported tons of people, millions of people. And then you just advance, you know, roll the film to what they're saying today. And it's just dishonest that they act like they never held those positions. And like it's some kind of denouement, you know, or Damascus moment for them that all of a sudden they realize, oh, we shouldn't have borders. And even Hillary in Munich at the security conference said that under Biden, things got out of control.
She finally admitted that.
And you know what? If more Democrats followed Hillary on that specific issue,
they'd get elected.
The midterms would be close.
Yeah, I think, well, they still may be close.
They still may be close, but like it would almost be a sure thing.
And I guess for sake of violating our own edict here, the Republicans would do well to do the same thing. Just because Trump did it doesn't make it right.
That's right.
And, you know, you and I,
whatever the issue, you and I disagreed
on tariffs, which we should talk about that decision.
Right. Sure.
And we disagreed on what he's doing politically and how he's doing it. Like, he's not perfect either.
No.
So this is true on both sides.
Right.
And I get it. The hard part is we have political parties. But I think within the parties, you can say, look, I agree with most of this. I don't agree here. And that's where good stuff happens, guys.
Yeah.
That's where the good stuff happens. When you get that internal debate and the give and take. And that's why we have this republic that spans our vast land, and we can have different input. Like, you don't have to be perfect. We just have to be good.
Well, let's talk about tariffs, Steve. You brought that up. It's a really interesting topic. 6-3 decision.
Yep.
The majority was split amongst themselves for what the exact reason is, and I think it's a sloppy decision. I think it's results-oriented. There's no single theory that unites that majority of six. I think there's two main opinions that were written that form the majority.
Yep.
And they don't really come to any kind of consensus as to why. One group said, well, Congress, in this emergency tariff legislation passed in 1977, did not specifically use the word delegate, because that word delegate wasn't in there, that they're delegating this tariff power to the president, that it therefore isn't a delegation. But yet that same law gave him the power to completely cut off any trade and to even exact very minor tariffs, but he couldn't do what's in between, is the argument, because they didn't use the word delegate in the law. Go ahead,
well,
Steve.
So here's where I think the divide is, and maybe I think there's something deeper going on. So basically you had Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson on the, we'll call it the liberal wing.
Yeah.
Right. Writing different opinions.
Right.
And where the fundamental disagreement was is something called the major questions doctrine. And the major questions doctrine is basically, here's what the Google summary is. While joining the majority to strike down tariffs, the liberal justices did not adopt a major questions doctrine, which suggests that Congress must speak clearly to delegate such authority, preferring to stick to the traditional statutory interpretation. So what they were doing is saying, look, under the statutory interpretation of where Trump is trying to find authority, it's not there. But under this major question doctrines, we don't think we need to decide that. Here's where this matters, because really what they're saying is we want to have our president, who's next, have authority to do whatever he wants to do or she wants to do, irrespective of a congressional delegation of authority. And the conservatives are saying, look, I agree with the conservatives on this. We want to check the president doesn't have plenary power here. And this has to be a clear delegation. So the outcome was the same, but sort of limited to the facts of what we have now, which gave Trump the seem to run through last night, where he says, look, now I'm going to do it again under these different statutes. And here we go.
So, and he already has.
And he already has.
Within 24 hours, he went to 15% across the board.
And this is worth a little bit of judicial, or I'll call it legal systems analysis. Do I agree with the tariffs? No. I don't like a president having sole plenary power to just tariff people. We can debate about it, and maybe it's another show. But I do not have a problem then, however, I would say, with Trump doing what he did. Because this, folks, is the system. What's going to happen is Trump's going to do this, and there's going to be a challenge, and it's going to matriculate up to the Supreme Court, and then we're going to get decisions on these new round of statutes and whether there is sufficient authority under these statutes to do it. And what that does is it slowly, yet if not methodically, and certainly not linearly, helps us carve out the separation of powers, what's the president's authority compared to the judicial branch and the legislative branch, and we get to find out. And look, we may not agree with it, but at least this is how the system works, and it will work. You know, the Supreme Court will decide this, and we'll find out if this new round is going to be constitutional.
See, I have a different view of what the role is of the Supreme Court. So they are supposed to be, in under our constitutional structure, they're supposed to be three equal branches, right? And the Supreme Court, to me, should not be the arbiter of the tension between Congress and the president. You mentioned plenary power. The president doesn't have plenary power to tariff. Congress can delegate that, and then it becomes analogous to a plenary power only because they've delegated it, and to whatever extent they've delegated it. And if Congress wants to repair the tariff situation that Trump is using, all Congress needs to do is pass another law or reform that emergency tariff provision that Trump was using. And Congress didn't do that. In the pendency of time during which the Supreme Court took up this case, Congress did not act to take away the tariff authority that Trump was ostensibly using. And so I think properly the way this, I agree with the three dissenters that the proper role of the Supreme Court in this situation would have been to defer to that battle, the ongoing tension and battle between the other two parts of the American system, the legislative and the executive. Because this delegation of power, Steve, as you know, and you talk about it all the time, the bureaucracy, the state, that the hidden state, if you will, the fourth column of American power, that now we have these unelected bureaucrats that do all this stuff, and like the Chevron decision points out, that tension between Congress and the executive should happen between them, and the Supreme Court should not be refereeing that.
Well, look,
that's where I come.
You've
down.
Just picked a scab of what is it now?
Yes, I did. I'm sorry, but that's my view.
Was it? Well, when was Marbury versus Madison decided? 1789. So, look, you are correct that actually you're not correct. I mean, when we first created the court. When our founders created the U.S. Supreme Court, it really didn't have much authority at all.
That's right.
I mean, it was sort of a...
It was 1803.
It was 1803. Okay. So Marbury versus Madison.
Happens to be the year Ohio became a state also.
So the U.S. Supreme Court, that's Troy, our fact checker. Over
there, yes, right.
Had very little authority to do anything. And it was like unknown. And if you're a member of the Supreme Court, it was sort of like whoop-de-doo. You know, here's a bone for my political pal.
Right.
Until Marshall takes the helm, who was Adams, I think, Secretary of State, or I forget his role. But anyway, Marbury comes along, or Madison comes along, sort of takes over and creates something called judicial review, because there's this big to do about whether Jefferson, coming in after Adams, would have to honor the midnight appointment of justices of the peace. So what happens is, and look, this still happens, the president's outgoing, so he's signing a bunch of documents saying, here, appoint this guy to this position.
Right.
This guy, he's doling out his favors as he's leaving. And Marbury, I guess, was the guy who was supposed to deliver him and doesn't do it in time. So Jefferson comes in and says, I cancel all this crap. So like the underlying dispute really didn't matter. But go read the decision, because what Marshall does is that he usurps that case.
That's right.
And turns it into something called judicial review, which now, ever since, the court of the United States Supreme Court gets to say certain acts of Congress, certain actions of the other branches are either unconstitutional or constitutional, and we just sort of have gone along.
Right.
So look, I mean,
I draw a difference here.
Okay.
The difference here would be, this is a dispute between the legislative branch and the executive branch. And there is a long history of delegation, and they're deciding whether this was a real delegation or not a real delegation. And Congress, if it wants to step in and make some kind of clear statement one way or the other, it's up to Congress.
Well, Congress can, in fact, and this happens a lot. But what we have is somebody has to interpret. So look, we have a situation where, say, Congress creates a statute at some point in history, and I'm not going to go into the details of all these statutes. It's not worth it.
But they
through some various language, sort of hint at the fact that the president can impose tariffs in certain.
Or he cut off all trade. Let's talk about this act, the IEE tariff.
Or cut off all trade.
He can cut off all trade.
But now there's a debate about whether that is a... So somebody sues and says, I don't think the president has that authority. And there's a debate about how you interpret that statute. While I agree with you that Congress can simply go back to the drawing board and pass another statute, and I wish you would, frankly. I wish you'd go act like a legislative body instead of a omnibus once-a-year bill on spending money and do hearings, stupid hearings that nobody listens to. This might be. But anyway, if they could do that and fix this. They could say either yes or no.
If in fact you think it needs to be fixed.
If you think it needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
The problem is they don't have the votes to do it, and they don't think they have the votes to do it, or they don't even have the wherewithal. Who knows why they're not doing it? Until that happens.
Probably because they agree.
There's still a legal controversy, a case or controversy, if you will, that needs to be resolved, and that's done in the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, with the U.S. Supreme Court routinely, all the time, does not grant cert on all kinds of things that they could clarify. And you take birthright citizenship or take the right to keep and bear arms. They've turned down legions of cases about those topics in the Supreme Court history. So they're very picky, choosy about the things they want to address.
That is true.
And what has happened because of their tariff ruling, the next day, FedEx sued the United States government for all the billions it wants to claw back that it says were misbegotten tariffs. Now, my little company, which imports from England and Germany automotive parts that I resell, right? I've paid tens of thousands in tariffs, right, this year under Trump's tariffs. Did I like it? No, I did not. Do my customers like it? No, they do not. Has it raised the prices of the goods I sell? Yes, it has, substantially. Now, is FedEx suing on my behalf? Because FedEx didn't pay the tariffs. FedEx collected the tariffs from its importer customers like me. I paid FedEx to then, as my broker, give that tax money to the federal government. And so, you like Kavanaugh pointed out in his dissent, how in the hell is this going to work, right? Is there going to be some kind of class action suit on behalf of every small business in America to claw back these tariffs? And then what about my customers who paid me a higher retail price for those goods? Am I then required to give them back the percentage that represents the tariff in my price increase? It's madness, and this should all be resolved between the two branches. That's what I'm saying.
Fair enough. My retort is that's what courts are for. We'll get it all figured out.
Well, I think it's an elevation of process over practicality. And here we go, John Roberts again, right? Screwing up. This is like his Obamacare decision to me. He's legislating, in my opinion. He is standing in for Congress and telling Congress what their law means when Congress is perfectly capable of either rescinding the law, amending the law, doing whatever the hell it wants. Clearly, there's not a majority in Congress that has a problem with Trump on these tariffs because they have chosen not to amend it.
All right. Well, look, I'm warming up to your position.
Can we talk about something that's kind of happy and it's culture related? I went and saw that movie, Melania.
Oh, did you? Okay.
And, it's kind of a chick film. I'll just go ahead and say that. Lots of pictures of fashion stuff. But the second half of that movie was more about her, her objectives as first lady, her meeting with mothers, for example, who had their husbands or their children captured by Hamas in the Gaza Strip, her efforts to free those people, and her efforts with Putin, the letter she wrote to Putin to try to get Ukrainian children repatriated back to the Ukraine, things like that. So her policy work. And that part of it, I thought, was super fascinating. Plus, she is eye candy. I'll just say it.
Well, she's a striking.
She's striking. Yeah. And I have to say, you know, like I put up with the chick stuff just because she is a fine-looking specimen. If you're a red-blooded American man, you could sit there for about an hour of the fashion show and wait for the last 45 minutes, which is really intellectually stimulating, very, very interesting, a peek at things that we would otherwise never see.
Well, not out of this current media, for sure, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is what's always bugged me about the Melania phenomenon, is that we don't know much about her because it's not...
Like, they refuse to cover
they
her.
They swooned over Jackie.
Right.
They swooned over Hillary.
Yeah.
You know, she's going to be the, you know, and
Michelle Obama.
Michelle Obama is the next one. And then even, what's her name? Biden's wife, Dr. Jill.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that all those women aren't fabulous women in their own right.
No, I would not say that either. Right.
And I think in a lot of ways they were.
Yeah.
Maybe Hillary. Anyway.
Even Mrs. Nixon, even Lady Bird Johnson, even if you will, the more homely, you know.
Yeah.
You know, now Nancy Reagan was a Hollywood actress. Melania is a supermodel.
The point is,
and they were never featured on like Cosmo Vanity Fair or a Vogue magazine or any of that stuff. And it was pure politically driven.
It's back to the theme of the hour. If she were married to a Democrat who was president, she'd be the hero of the left.
Exactly right.
The hero of the left.
That's all we'd hear about.
And it, just because she's married to Trump, she's this evil, stupid, ridiculous, blah, blah, blah. And we'll give her the time of day.
Right.
And it's just not fair.
Yeah.
It's not fair. So, but fortunately, you have shows like ours recognizing this.
Well, what's really interesting, and it comes out in the second half, is her family are survivors of Eastern Bloc communism. And we should not lose... track of that fact that Trump married, you know, an immigrant, you know, who survived the Soviet Union's domination and oppression of not just women, but all of society, you know, single party system, the Stasi, secret police in East Germany, all of that kind of stuff, you know, they survived. And we are not learning those lessons. And in places like New York City, where we now have a communist mayor, he is saying things like, you need two forms of photo ID to shovel snow, but you need no photo ID to vote in my elections.
It just, again, it's
this. I mean, this is the kind of crackpot stuff.
Absurdity.
He did say that the two photo ID was a federal rule on shoveling snow. I don't know what the federal rule on shoveling snow is, but that's.
Well, it has to do with they're paying these people, so they need to be able to identify.
To verify. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is thick with hypocrisy. Even if it's just the federal.
Troy, government. Even in Ohio, you can waddle down and vote if you have a utility bill with your name on the address, which is crazy. It's And the other thing about that, we need to get rid of the mail-in vote. A whole month of voting.
Getting rid of it is probably an overstatement, but certainly restricting it to those who absolutely need to mail in their vote.
Well, those who are traveling out of the country.
Military service. And overseas people.
Exactly. Or sick
or
in the hospital.
In college and you can't get back. I mean, that's different. There was a reason for... I remember voting.
But those are the classic legitimate reasons.
I remember voting for the first time thinking, I'm going to go vote. You know, I'm going to go, like you wanted to go in person.
Right.
It wasn't
right.
a mail-in.
Well, and to have a whole season of voting is crazy too, because you're voting out of sequence
with what
other voters are voting about. During that month where there's October surprises, if you voted October the 1st, and then 2 weeks later you learn that the whole pretext of your vote is wrong, or some new bit of news comes out, well, you already voted.
Yep.
So you're not on the same page as the rest of the electorate.
You're done.
That's crazy.
You're done.
We should all be on the same page.
I mean, it is, I think that will shake itself out. It's another one of those agenda items that I think there is probably more agreement on if people were being honest.
They say over 70% of registered Democrats are in favor of photo ID on voting.
Yeah.
And something like 85-90% of registered Republicans.
It's on the agenda list of things you have to believe in or not believe in. So you have to take a stance against this because it's racist or it's this or it's xenophobic, whatever nonsense it is. Look, if you're allowed to go vote, just go vote.
Little bit about Ohio. So I picked this up based on a discussion in another state, Iowa, where. Iowa is a very red state, you know, in terms of registered voters, very Republican state. And there is a huge debate about data centers going on in that state, too, just like here in Ohio. And it's all about the same issues. It's about pollution, the diesel generator backups, the groundwater, the jacking of real estate appraisals that's driving older people on fixed income out of their homes, the traffic, the fact that all of this inconvenience and higher taxes is for very few jobs, because the data centers are basically going to be run robotically and staffed by just a handful of engineers. And, you know, a lot of those may not even be Americans. They may be people that come in, under some kind of, work allowance in our visa system. And so you don't get the jobs. You don't get the economic benefits of these. They're just these big, huge, ugly buildings out in the middle, taking up space, driving up the, ruining the lifestyle and taking up a lot of space and creating a lot of pollution, light pollution at night, actual particle pollution up in the air, and people are just in these Republican states and Republican areas of Ohio. Also, you're having a groundswell of, if you will, normal Republicans, just people who believe in, you know, they love their country, they believe in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and they're just regular taxpaying Joes and Joannes. And then you've got the elite establishment Republicans like we have here in Ohio with Jobs Ohio and Mike DeWine and John Husted, the people who pushed Intel in the dead of night on the people of Licking County without any vote, without any hearings, without any notice.
Without public notice.
Yeah, with NDA signed by the insiders and with junkets out to Arizona to visit Intel and to get romanced into all of this. And those elites are saying to the other Republicans, hey, we big boys here downtown, you know, in Iowa or in Ohio, we know what's best for you, the little people. And that is not the Republican Party I signed up for, I'll tell you.
No, it's not.
I mean, there's a real divide happening.
I was having breakfast with some friends last week, and we got to kicking this around, and it's not even a Republican or a Democrat. It's just money, right? It's just all about, like, I've always asked rhetorically, and maybe this is an oversimplification, but how do these people in charge get so much money? You know, and it's like,
right.
You know, how does this happen? So somebody's getting paid something for somebody,
right.
For something, you know,
right.
It might be your land values. It might be somebody else's land values. I mean, there's a reason this stuff happens, and it's not just because Licking County is the perfect place for intel. And, you know, somebody's getting paid, and somebody's making money. And even if the intent was not for certain people who did make money to make money, they do anyway, right? So you, like you said, there's people signing NDAs in Johnstown. And what they're really doing is they've got insider information about land values and what's about to happen.
Right.
So they can act accordingly, whether yeah. they buy, whether they sell, whether they hold, whatever it is.
Yeah.
They make decisions that will later line their pocket with money because they have insider information. I don't mind when people have insider information unless it's not fair to everybody else.
Yeah.
So what I mean is, if you just didn't go look, or if I just didn't go look to find that NVIDIA was leading the charge in AI chips, and therefore I didn't go invest all my money in NVIDIA 12 months ago.
Right.
Well, that information was out there. I just didn't look for it.
Right.
But if that information was not out there, and I happened to be in Congress, for instance, and right. I knew that NVIDIA was going to get certain contracts.
That's right.
So then I act on it, then it's not fair.
That's right.
So and I think Trump, back to the State of the Union, called that out. We're going to get rid
right.
of this.
Right.
And shame on anybody who's making money investing in, like,
he mentioned Nancy Pelosi yeah, by name.
Forgive me if I don't believe that you guys are objecting to this because you're altruistic enough to resist the human temptation to go make money on insider information.
Right.
I don't believe you.
Right. So she does a little pillow talk to Mr. Pelosi, and Mr. Pelosi, you know, just like Mr. Ilhan Omar, you know, you little pillow talk, and you tell your spouse, hey, it'd probably be a good idea to buy NVIDIA because I sit on the Military Appropriations Committee and I happen to know we're negotiating, you know, the Pentagon's right. negotiating with them.
And if I
that's crooked as hell.
I had that information and nobody else did, and I traded on
you go
it.
To prison.
I go to prison.
Like Martha Stewart.
Yeah. You go to prison. Yeah. Yeah. So look, you can agree or disagree with the rules, but at least apply them equally.
Yeah, exactly right. So anyway, I think that potentially can tear a lot of Republican areas, a lot of red states could be torn apart. This is brewing, and it's there's a real divide in Ohio, and you know, I think this top down we know what's better for you attitude by the establishment Republicans is what's going to lead to a complete overthrow of them by your more blue collar Republicans, and I think that's underway. I think it's going to happen. I gotta do my little cock walk around the site here today. Yesterday, I had the law firm of Murdoch, Murdoch, and Murdoch, which is fictional law firm, but it's just me with my stupid $30,000 law degree. I was able to get myself out of a $45 parking ticket with the city of Columbus. And you can do this too. So if you feel that you've been wronged, even though it's a minuscule amount and you have a little time on your hands, I encourage people at the low where the rubber meets the road, if you get, say, a speeding ticket and you were on the way to hospital because your wife broke water and she's about to have a baby, well, there are provisions. There's general, you know, law that allows you to speed in emergency situations. So if you got a ticket for that, or if you got a ticket for parking, but the sign was obscured by snow, or your landlord towed away your vehicle because, he just wanted to and he didn't post the towing signs that are prescribed in revised code, go ahead and take them to you fight the ticket, or go to small claims court.
Take them to court. That's right.
Assert your rights.
Yeah.
So I will tell you this, and I'll tell my good friend Troy, who's still in law school, that as a sophomore law student, there is a case, and you can get on whatever it is, the Nexus
Lexus Westall.
Yeah, Lexus. You can get on there. Murdoch versus Gottlieb. Murdoch versus Gottlieb.
I argued
that.
I shudder to think the other side. I can't even, I feel sorry for Gottlieb already.
Yes, and you should. This financed my first fuel cell on my race car by taking this guy to court. So in that particular case, I argued to the Ohio Court of Appeals. So it's part of the body of law in Ohio. As a sophomore law student, there's probably very few that ever went to the Ohio Court of Appeals, but I did. A three-judge panel, and I argued my case, filed all the briefs. Mr. Gottlieb was there, who was actually an attorney who owned this apartment complex. And my argument was, because snow had fallen on the night he towed my vehicle away from my friend's apartment, that the snow on the sign rendered that sign legally ineffective. Because how could I comply with whatever was on the sign when it's covered with ice and snow? I had no notice, and therefore I shouldn't have been towed, and the resulting destruction to my vehicle, it had the parking brake on when the tow truck took it, that he had to reimburse me for that, plus the cost of the towing. And it was ruled in my favor. He gave me $500, and it paid for the fuel cell on my race car. The point is, stand up for yourself, even if you don't have any money, even if you have to fight, because you can't afford an attorney. You should hire an attorney. If you don't have an attorney, you're probably going to lose. But go ahead and stand up for yourself if you have the time and if you can be respectful to the hearing officer. In this case, it was a parking ticket against the city of Columbus yesterday. And back in law school, it was a three-person panel of the Ohio Court of Appeals. That's pretty big stuff when you're a law student. So at any rate, that's my little speech. Stand up for yourself and use the law like it should be used to get to a just result. So,
as a practicing lawyer, how can I possibly disagree with you other than to call me?
I should have called Steve and hired him. But
I would have done it for free.
Over $45.
Yeah, I would have done it for free.
Anyway.
All right, a little good and bad.
Good and bad. I'm going to point out, Steve kind of mentioned the pageantry in the State of the Union. So there were two pilots that got the Congressional Medal of Honor last night. One was Eric Slover, who piloted an Army Chinook helicopter dropping off special forces in the Venezuelan operation, the operation by the U.S. government in Venezuela to capture Maduro. He had been shot in the legs, so he was the first helicopter in, and there was a machine gun nest right in front of the helicopter, and he got shot in the legs four times, and pieces and parts of his legs were all over the cabin. Blood is flowing on the floor back into the helicopter where the Green Berets and the SEALs and all, you know, where the Special Forces guys were. And he was able to still land that chopper and maneuver it sideways so his waist gunner could take out the nest and safely deposit the Special Forces. So he got the Congressional Medal of Honor. He's there on a walker, still recovering. It was really quite the scene. And then the other pilot was, this is back in 1952 during the Korean War. Big secret. We weren't allowed to know this. This is where I go crazy. They withheld until the year 2002. They withheld the knowledge that we were actually flying against Soviet Union pilots, amongst others, but many of them were Soviet Union pilots in the Korean War. They weren't just Chinese. They weren't just Norks. They were Soviet Union veterans of World War II, right? These were the top people in their MiGs. This guy, Royce Williams, was bounced by seven MiGs, and he shot down four of them. 260 bullet holes were found in his airplane, okay, when he landed. And this was all kept from the American people until 2002. He finally got, at age 100 last night, the Congressional Medal of Honor. Just an incredible story. and maybe the longest dogfight in U.S. aerial history. It went on for a substantial period. You can imagine he shot down four jets. So he's an ace, and nobody was allowed to know about it. So it's just unbelievable. So those are my two winners. My loser is Eileen Gu, who another Norman, Boomer Esiason, whose first name is Norman, by the way, calls insufferable. And Eileen Gu is an American citizen, 22 years old, born in California, a Chinese refugee mother, American father, and she's an American citizen, as is her mother. And raised in San Francisco, goes to Stanford University, all the amenities of living and being a child of in America. She chooses, because she got paid millions by the Chinese government, to compete at the Olympics the last time and then this past Olympics for the Chinese Olympic team.
Yeah.
And, well, what can I say?
Where's your loyalty, right?
Yeah, I just think she's just immature, not thinking. It's all about the money to her. And I think in the long run, she's going to regret this decision. So,
all right, my good and bad. Here's my good. I don't know if everybody can see it. Look at here.
Yeah.
Look, we were talking about Muhammad Ali and Sonny Liston. Now, the famous picture of Ali, you know, with his arm sort of crooked above Liston on the canvas. That wasn't the February 25th, 1964 fight. That was the May fight. But these type of sports, I don't know if this hockey picture was an actual photograph or if somebody took it from a video or whatever it is. But kudos. This is phenomenal. This captures everything awesome about the country at that particular time. Just this big smile, bloody teeth, arm in the air, draped in the American flag.
Right.
And my bad is the opposite of this. Anybody who doesn't think this is awesome, shame on you all. This is awesome.
Jack Hughes.
Yeah, forgive me. I should have said that.
That's okay.
And just because Trump is president doesn't mean you have to hate this. You should love it like the rest of us. And if you don't love it, then you should ask yourself why you don't love this country. And then you should ask yourself, why don't you leave?
And Trump announced last night that the Presidential Medal of Freedom is going to go to the goalie on that team who has earned the nickname the Secretary of Defense.
That's awesome.
Because he had 42 Canadian pucks shot at him at warp speed. He stopped all of them but one.
And we can
unbelievable.
Look, we can all have a list of grievances about our country. We can all say whatever you want, but we still have to love it first.
Right.
Because you can't fix something you don't love.
Right.
All right.
And to say it's political. So, hey, Tiger Woods, many other 12 other athletes have gotten the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Trump is not breaking new ground here. And if that goalie, if anybody qualifies as an athlete for representing their country, and I don't care what party, I don't even care if he's a communist. I have no idea what his party is, but he deserves that Presidential Medal of Freedom.
And look, a medal from the president doesn't mean anything to me, but the idea that this is awesome for the country does.
Yes.
So, Troy, what you got?
There's actually been 40 athletes who've gotten the medal.
40?
Yeah, 40 total.
But I think 12 because they're athletes, I think, was the thing.
That's probably it then.
Yeah, like Tiger, you know.
Bad, did you guys watch the BAFTAs? I'm actually a movie guy. Jamie Foxx and I forget who else was up there giving an award. Guy in Tourette's in the back lets out the N-word and bitch at the same time. Wow.
So he's got Tourette's?
Yeah.
I don't want to say that's awesome, but it's sort of. I mean,
it's like, how is this possible? Like,
how does this happen?
It's like an SNL skit.
And they just kept going.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like the reactions. You should look up like the reactions. Everybody's like, what the hell? That's bad. You know, that's a very unfortunate circumstances, but it's also, I agree, kind of funny. Like, how is this possible?
Troy, can I ask? Wasn't the guy with Tourette's an actor in a movie about Tourette's? That's why he was there, right?
Something like that. I have no idea.
I believe that's the case.
I just think that's insane.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and then my good is State of the Union last night. I liked how the camera guys were following Trump's narrative, and I think Trump was saying something like the Somali pirates hijacking Minnesota. Then they panned the cameras at Ian Omar. Then, like, they talk about transgenders, and they panned the camera over to that one girl from Delaware. I think it's
right, they're going right where they know the reaction's going to be, right?
It's just like, these cameramen are pretty talented. I thought it was pretty good.
Right.
All right. Well, look, that will conclude your weekly dose of common sense. If you need more, it's easy. Just go to the backlog at commonsenseohioshow.com, or you're going to have to wait until next week when we come back with more common sense. If you've got a topic you want us to cover, again, commonsenseohioshow.com, or leave it in the socials, leave it in the comments. We'll do our best to get to it.